That morning, he addressed an outdoor crowd in a light drizzle before heading back inside his hotel to speak to a Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce breakfast. Arriving without his wife, Kennedy quipped that it took Mrs. Kennedy longer to get ready in the morning and would be along shortly.
2 years ago, I said that introduced myself in Paris by saying that I was the man who had accompanied Mrs. Kennedy to Paris. I'm getting that same sensation as I travel around Texas. Nobody wonders what Lyndon and I wear.
Jackie Kennedy was clearly the star on this trip. When she arrived for breakfast to a huge ovation, she was stylishly dressed, as always. That morning, she had selected a pink wool Chanel suit with pillbox hat. After that day, it seems no one would ever again remember her wearing anything else. Fort Worth is just a 30-minute drive from Dallas, but following breakfast, the presidential party boarded Air Force One, a Boeing 707, and flew to Dallas Love Field, a trip lasting about 11 minutes. Upon arrival, there was yet another enthusiastic crowd, and the president and first lady shook hands along a fence before getting into the presidential limousine, a 1961 Lincoln convertible. The car was equipped with a plexiglass bubble top, and some thought had been given to using it since November 22nd began as a rainy day. But the skies had cleared by the time Air Force One landed in Dallas, so the top stayed off. President and Mrs. Kennedy were seated in the back of the car, and Governor and Mrs. Connolly were seated in jump seats between the Kennedys and the front seat. In the front seat were two veteran Secret Service agents, Roy Kellerman, the special agent in charge, and Bill Greer, who drove. A motorcade route had been designed to wind its way through Dallas before making its way to the Dallas Trade Mart, where Kennedy was scheduled to arrive at 12:30 p.m. to deliver a lunchtime speech to a group of businessmen. Following the speech, the presidential party was headed to Austin for the final stop of the Texas tour. The motorcade route was jammed with throngs of people waving at and cheering the first couple. Once or twice, JFK told Greer to stop the car, and he shook hands with well-wishers, including a group of nuns. The stops put the motorcade slightly behind schedule. It was already 12:30 p.m. when it reached Dealey Plaza, 5 minutes away from the Trade Mart. Dealey Plaza was at the end of the official motorcade route, and there were fewer spectators gathered along the street. After passing through the plaza, the motorcade was to take an on-ramp to the Stemmons Freeway for the short ride to the Trade Mart. To pass through Dealey Plaza, the presidential car came down Main Street, turned right onto Houston Street, and after a single short block took a sharp hairpin left turn onto Elm Street, with the Texas Schoolbook Depository and Daltex buildings sitting astride the corner of Elm and Houston, behind the president's car when it turned. The plaza was an open area with grass on either side of the roadway. Up a slight incline to the right of the car was a picket fence, and behind it, a railroad yard. Straight ahead was a railroad overpass. Just as the car was about to enter Dealey Plaza, Mrs. Connolly turned around and said to Kennedy, "Mr. President, you can't say Dallas doesn't love you." "No, you can't," Kennedy replied. Almost precisely at 12:30 p.m., a shot that many described as a firecracker or backfire rang out, and pigeons fluttered from their roosting spot atop the Texas Schoolbook Depository. Secret Service agents in the trailing car looked around, but no one moved. Then there were more shots. How many to this day remains unknown and a point of dispute. In an 8mm film made by an amateur photographer, Abraham Zapruder, Kennedy can be seen raising clenched fists to his throat as the car emerges from behind a freeway sign. In the jump seat, Governor Connolly can be seen turning to his right to try to see Kennedy, then turning back to his left. Precisely when he was hit is a matter of debate. Seconds later, the right side of Kennedy's head can be seen exploding in a red halo, and the president moved violently to the rear and his left. Mrs. Kennedy, reacting in horror, climbed toward the trunk of the car, apparently to retrieve a piece of brain matter. Motorcycle policemen trailing to the rear and left of the limousine were sprayed with blood and brains. By that time, Secret Service agent Clint Hill had reacted and reached the vehicle, climbing aboard as Greer accelerated and sped toward Parkland Hospital. At Parkland Hospital, Kennedy was rushed to an emergency room, where doctors quickly determined, from the brain matter protruding from the president's head, that he was dead or soon would be. Nonetheless, they did everything they could to save him, so there could be no second-guessing later. The doctors and nurses who treated Kennedy all described a small wound in his throat as an entry wound, about the diameter of a pencil. In an attempt to revive Kennedy, doctors made a small incision across the wound to enlarge it slightly so that a breathing tube could be inserted. Of course, it was fruitless. According to Dr. Robert McClelland, one of the Parkland doctors, the cause of death was massive head injuries with loss of large amounts of cerebral and cerebellum tissues and massive blood loss. President John F. Kennedy was pronounced dead at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.